You are about to experience Vegas Bad Boys of podcasting. Fortunately, you are about to hear lots of opinions, but rarely any facts. Impersonations might occur, but good luck trying to figure them out. This program is not intended for kids or the easily offended. Listener discretion is advised. You have been warned. You press play. It's too late to stop. Get ready to podcast.
Welcome to another edition of Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. I'm your host, DJ Impact. I got the Vegas Bad Boys here with me. It's good to see you, gentlemen. And three count. That's where we're at right now. We got three good topics for tonight. And we're going to get right to it.
It's time.
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents...
One, two, three.
Count Talk.
Count Talk, baby.
Our first one is titled, Where Does the Fiend Goes From Here? And that comes from The Last Word on Sports.com. So I'm just going to set up some of the things that he bring up, and then we'll discuss it. He mentions that, you know, the Fiend has been unstoppable since the day Bray Wyatt unveiled his new persona. His whole aesthetic is nightmare fuel for kids and adults alike. You know, he's terrifying, but at the same time, cool, reminiscent of how Kane was back in the day. But he says, unlike the Big Red Monster, his transformation and goals were never explained. His evolution from the original Bray Wyatt to the Fiend just happened suddenly, and no one knows why. Wyatt went away for an extended period of time and returned as the Fiend, giving barely any details on his newfound evil. The character was much stronger now and could not feel pain. Fans were left wondering if this is still the work of Sister Abigail, or did Bray Wyatt find someone or something more sinister and now serves a new master in the process. Then he goes around talking about the Wyatt family, how it started in 2012 in the main roster. It was known for looking for misguided souls. Again, it talked about Sister Abigail. He used the term like follow the buzzards. Of course, he had the lost sheep, which was Luke Harper and Eric Rowan. It talks about how he even made Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton question their own sanity and almost had them believing him at one point. It also talks about that the Fiend, it says the Fiend, on the other hand, had this another mysterious story throughout his character run. He would rarely mention Sister Abigail. He would spew out lines such as let me in, and he was put on earth to protect us, and with little to no context. This is where the questions would start to arise. Who we're letting in? Is it still Bray Wyatt and Sister Abigail, or is it the unnamed demon who gave the Fiend power he harnessed? And who exactly is the Fiend protecting us from exactly? And then he talks a little bit about what happened on SmackDown and Raw. The Fiend's motivation, he says, it got a little bit murkier. There was a feud with Braun Strowman. That happened. Of course, his rivalry with Kevin Owens and Randy Orton says he had pushed another narrative that the Fiend, quote, changes people, end quote. The question fans are asking is, what is the real effect of the Fiend, and why should the wrestlers be afraid of it? And to this day, this question remains unanswered. We'll talk about that in just a second. It also talked about, well, maybe a statistic return to form would be something good. It mentions that the first and necessary step into the next phase of the characters is making it scarce, but keeping Bray Wyatt active. He mentions like maybe Finn Balor's, how he does the demon persona. He doesn't come out all the time. So maybe that would be kind of a good look. Or maybe how the Undertaker, how he served as the judge, jury, executioner, cleansing the WWE would be a good storyline to go with. Or giving the Fiend a clear purpose would add more depth to him and maybe freshen up his gimmick tremendously, according to this writer. He also kind of mentioned that, you know, bringing back Bray Wyatt as his old self would be reminiscent of the Jushin Thunder Liger, and the Fiend could be much like Kishin Liger, which was rarely seen alter ego of Jushin. So he mentions all of these things as well. More importantly now, just to kind of sum up what he also said, was that WWE is missing out on a potential successor to The Undertaker. And Bray Wyatt is an extremely talented mind and is unlike any other sport has ever seen. His constant evolution proves the genius of the Wyatt. The company's lack of direction for him endangers the character's lusters. Most fans are still into the gimmick, but for how long? Loving or hating someone and not knowing why will fans leave questioning the reason they even supported this being in the first place? So guys, let me just throw it out there. Do you think that The Fiend in some way is just maybe slowly losing his luster? Is there something, where can The Fiend go from here? You know, what's the real effect of The Fiend and why should wrestlers be afraid of it? Apparently, according to him, this has never been answered. There's a lot of questions, he said, that's never been answered. There's been things thrown out there and we've kind of accepted it and we kind of like it, but it just never explains certain things. So with that, why don't I start with you, Simon Street? Normally, I wait to see someone just to see who want to start. But where were you say where The Fiend is at right now? Of course, we haven't seen him for a while, but, you know, when he does come back, should he have more of the demon effect where, you know, maybe he's just Bray Wyatt and every blue moon we see The Fiend, or should we constantly see The Fiend, or where does The Fiend go from here?
I think, first of all, want to point out that there's a lot of emotion that was in that that article. Mm-hmm. Apparently, the writer is just not happy with the direction that WWE has allowed, might I add, Bray Wyatt to kind of run with The Fiend and his alter personalities. Mm-hmm. But outside that, I don't really honestly see a problem. I think that kind of what he's doing right now is you never know what you're going to get whenever Bray Wyatt comes back. We don't know if we're going to get The Fiend. We don't know if we're going to get, you know, Firehouse Clubhouse, you know, Bray Wyatt, or if we're going to get, you know, Bray Wyatt from the Bayou and the Wyatt family. And that's the fun part about it. And it reminds me a lot of Mick Foley. You know, sometimes you didn't know if you're going to get Cactus Jack. You didn't know if you're going to get Dude Love. You didn't know if you're going to get Mankind. And it is fun. And again, it could be just me and maybe a small amount of people that feel the same way. But I feel that's a good way. And I think that The Fiend right now, the fact that he doesn't have to be on TV and somebody is carrying, I would say, the gimmick per se in Alexa Bliss to kind of run with it a little bit, is pretty ingenious. And so something that even as a young kid marking out, I was like, man, wouldn't it be cool? And I thought about it, and it sounds stupid, but I'll say it. Wouldn't it be cool if The Undertaker could transfer his powers into somebody else and somebody else was the Undertaker version of it? And even as a kid, it sounded stupid, but never thought in wildest dreams. Of course, Michaels would say that. I never thought in the wildest dreams with this fiend that every person he's faced, which they talked about in the article, they've changed him. And I personally like that part about it. I like that when you face The Fiend, if you don't let him in, because the only person that's let him in is Alexa Bliss. Everybody that does not let him in per se or fights it has a negative effect. At least that's where I thought this was going.
So, let me ask you, Sin City. He says, look, giving The Fiend a clear purpose would add more depth to him and it'll freshen up the gimmick tremendously. Do you think there... Does The Fiend not have a clear purpose? Is that lost somewhere in his character? And is that something that you think needs to be really freshened up?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there toward the end, I mean, they kind of booked themselves into a bit of a corner. You know, they knew what kind of a route that they wanted to go. They knew that they wanted to tell the story of Randy Orton and Edge. Mm-hmm. And so you have Randy Orton relapse his feud with Bray Wyatt. So it was obvious in hindsight that Randy Orton was the one that was being elevated from that, you know, that exchange. At this point, there has to be some change to the gimmick in some way, shape, or form. I think that there at the very end, mm-hmm. people got kind of complacent with it. I thought that it was awesome, and I still think that the Fiend is an amazing character. I think that they did some amazing storytelling with it. But you know, you can't burn a guy to a fucking crisp, and then all of a sudden just have him go on like as if nothing happened. Obviously, some things need, you know, there needs to be some form of a change with the gimmick. I'm really interested to see what's going to happen. Now, maybe WWE will just, you know, give us a big F you and,
well, good.
You know, and they'll just treat it like as if that, you know, him being burned alive never happened.
And see, that goes back to what I think maybe what the author is saying. And I know it looked like Matt is inching to get in, but it goes to the point of maybe what he's saying. People don't get an explanation. All you know is you see a man get burned and then he come back. Should nothing not be safe? Should we just go suspend the what we saw and go, oh, okay, great, he's back? Should, I mean, everything, every step of the storyline, usually there's some sort of context to that. But for him, there isn't. Let me go over to you, Matt Michaels. It says the fans are asking, what is the real effect of the Fiend and why what should wrestlers be afraid of it?
This? What fans are asking this?
Listen, he doesn't say that. He poses this as a question.
Say that. That's the problem. The fans are asking this. What WWE fan is going, God, I wonder what his motivation is for being a pro wrestler and doing what he's doing? Fuck this author, man. It's fucking horrendous. First off, he likes to compare Kane. Oh, maybe because it's, you know, a darker character. The Undertaker and Kane is all this guy could go to. All right. The Undertaker, for fuck's sake, is a totally different person who, you know, if you look, there wasn't much evolution except the elevation of the character was just in layers. And then all of a sudden he became an American badass who rode motorcycles and shit like that. So where did the fucking powers go? Fuck this guy. Number two, he didn't mention Firefly Funhouse once. Bullshit. Fuck this guy. Fuck him hard because he's an idiot. Wow. The fact that he didn't even mention that character, which is an actual different character than the Fiend, means he could go suck his own boo, bah, boo, whatever you want to call his dick, because he can suck it. The fact of the matter is
removed.
Yeah, exactly. No rib here.
See? Is it safe to say you're giving Arthur a no Vaseline, fuck you hard reward?
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. So he liked to point to Kane here and say, first of all, Kane's clear motivation was one thing. All right. Beat up and take over and get revenge on my brother, the Undertaker. Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. So when Kane loses at WrestleMania 20 or WrestleMania 14, and then goes on to wrestle the fire match and do a couple other things with Undertaker. And then he starts going around with X-Pac and eventually, oh, that's right. He was a mute who had a horribly burned face, but thank God X-Pac gave him a little talking device that he could put towards his throat to talk. Oh, and then eventually he got good enough to get rid of that and actually have a voice. And then eventually we take off his mask and the hideous burns that we've been promised is nothing more than smeared black makeup from something they couldn't get together and a bad fucking shaven head with hair still on. It was awful. So,
but even if all those things were bad and don't make sense, at least they are answers to why Kane was in that transitioning.
No, 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 no. One fair thing, and that is this. He came in with a clear-cut thing. To defeat my brother to go against The Undertaker, that was that. That story ended. Okay?
Right.
What was his motivation from that point on? There's never a clear-cut motivation. It happens through one story to the next. That's the point. The point is that one character cannot come in and have the same motivation for 10 fucking years. It's ridiculous. This guy basically put his own head up his ass to find this story. Because the idea here that, first of all, Bray Wyatt, when he came in, let's go back. He was Husky Harris.
Yeah.
All right.
Way back, he was Nexus Husky Harris.
Yeah, when he was Husky Harris. Well, but but the idea here is that when the Bray Wyatt character came in, he had a motivation of making the WWE his own, right? And his own image, because we saw that with guys like Harper and Rowan. Then we saw it with Braun Strowman, who he didn't mention as part of the family at all, who just mentioned he had a feud with. So then, as you know, as it comes to, you have to evolve that character, right? You have him go away. He comes back, not as the Fiend first, but as the Firefly Funhouse character, and warning people about the Fiend and that this thing is about to come. And because essentially the WWE did not let him in when he was Bray, then you got the two sides. You got this happy-go-lucky, oh boy, this is going to be fun, but you ain't going to like this, Bray Wyatt. And then you had the Fiend. The Fiend has just been burned to death. There has been no indication how he's coming back, when he's coming back, or why he's coming back. So fuck this article.
And then the author.
He's pissed off and the thing hasn't even happened yet.
No Vaseline.
No. In fact, if I had two raw dogs, double raw dog.
Oh my. Okay.
Hold on, man. Hold on. You went too far, man. In a row, then.
Yeah, one for Kane and one for Bray.
Okay, with that, let's jump over into our second count. Matt Michaels is catching his breath, drinking some water. He's lit right now, man. He's this author pissed. Hey, author, stop pissing off Matt Michaels.
Yeah.
Okay. Damn.
Might as well just ask him to stop breathing. Everybody pisses Matt Michaels off.
Right.
You know, it's not that he pisses me off. The fact that he gets paid for this pisses me off.
Well, let's go over to our second account, WrestlingInc.com. Had an article titled "Edge Responds to Criticism of Winning the Royal Rumble Match at the Age of 47. I'm just going to really concentrate just on how it starts off, and then a couple of Edge quotes. And it just talks about how, of course, Edge is the winner of the 2021 Royal Rumble. And he was a guest on WWE after the bell with Corey Graves, where he talked about his goals in WWE after returning again. And Edge said that the criticism he received from some about the fact that he won the Royal Rumble at the age of 47 isn't something he's worried about. He said his main goal in coming back to WWE is just to tell great stories and mix it up with talent he's never faced before. And these are the couple of quotes. First one, all I can control is trying to be the best shape I can possibly be in. But my ass is in the gym so that at least I can look the part, move the part, feel the part, and that's all I can control. The last quote he said in this one that we'll concentrate on is, I can't control people's opinion. I can't control if people have ageism issues. What I want to do is come back and tell how the story is told, and tell it with multiple dance partners. If those dance partners can take something from it, then that's my goal. All right. Sin City Steve. Is ageism the issue that fans really have with Edge? Or maybe is this the fact that people are going, well, what about all of the talent that just, you know, are new in the biz or moving up in the biz that should maybe have that part versus someone who's been in there now for 2-3 decades? Is it ageism?
So I think that with Edge, you have a little bit of an out with that. As he mentioned, he never lost the World Heavyweight Championship. Mm-hmm. It was stripped from him. So it's one of those things where that is a compelling storyline vehicle that you can use to put him back into the title hunt at the age of 47. Realistically, I think that I can speak for a lot of people when I say, when I can outright say that I was extremely surprised that Edge won the Royal Rumble. There were a lot of people online that were upset about it. I wasn't upset as much as I was unsure of how they were going to pull this off, because I didn't want it to be something that you know, sacrificed putting over your younger talent just to make room for somebody that stepped away or was forced away, I should say, for a while. The thing is, they've already been very smart with how they're using Edge. They have put him into a role where they've had him in scenes, in vignettes with people backstage. I know that he just did, you know, something on SmackDown with Shinsuke Nakamura where they were sitting in the back. They were standing in the back. They were talking to each other, but they still made a point of saying, hey, this is Shinsuke Nakamura talking with Edge, blah, blah, blah. So that right there got Shinsuke a little bit more of a rub as a result. And he's done that across the board.
Took guy backstage and talked to him. That gave him a rub.
Well, dude, because
he didn't even hear the conversation. It was just they were backstage talking.
So here's the thing: is ultimately, would Shinsuke have been on the show otherwise? Seriously, think
probably
like
not.
And okay, well then there you go. At least he was on the show. Even if he's in there for like a 10-second segment. Dude, with Edge, realistically, I think that they've been very smart with what they've been doing. Just using him as a bad example.
That's like saying the guy who walked behind when they were having the
Damian Priest.
What was that?
Damian Priest, Killer or Karrion Kross. Anybody else that he was that he was in a fucking segment with this week? They made a point of putting him in segments with very wide array of people on the roster.
When they were in
the Nakamura one was one that I brought up only because he would not have been on the show otherwise. And I'm going to finish this point. So we're going to be talking over each other, which is really cool. But anyway, I think they're doing this in a very smart way
to hold a conversation that they'd have him on the show.
Did he really just talk over you? I'm trying to stir the pot.
He tried. I still made my point. So he just comes off looking like a bitter old curmudgeon. So I win.
You made your point that Shinsuke was on camera. Like a background fucking
How else would he have? He wouldn't have been on the fucking show otherwise.
He could have taken Edge out in the handcuffs. Those guys got more rub than fucking Shinsuke did in a fucking episode. Come on.
So are you saying that Edge should have rubbed Shinsuke a lot more?
If you're going to give a rub, at least have fucking Shinsuke say something on camera, hear the conversation. We got to hear it from Edge with all the other guys he mentioned.
Because Shinsuke doesn't speak the dialect that Vince loves.
How are you getting him a rub if he can't speak
English? Okay, anyway, whatever. Fuck off. Anyway, dude, like, it's been very smart the way that they've used him. So he's had interactions with people on all three different rosters, and he's not there to bury other people on the roster. I think that's the biggest issue that people had when Edge won the Royal Rumble is that, okay, he's going to be the unequivocal number one challenger for absolutely everything, and he's going to make everybody look like shit as a result. So that didn't happen. And in fact, it's been the exact opposite.
So let me go over to you, Simon Street. When it comes, I mean, look, I'm pretty sure you would say I didn't expect Edge to win, and I don't know what your feelings are. Maybe you'll let us know. But, I mean, do you believe that he was the right winner for the Men's Royal Rumble?
First of all, I didn't know he was going to win.
Okay.
Reason why is because they didn't have to do a surprise entry with him, and that little promo he cut the week before Royal Rumble. led me to believe, for me, my prediction, that he probably was going to win the whole thing. Very strong possibility. Mm-hmm. I liked how he won the Royal Rumble. Let's put it that way. That he started. What number did he start, Sin City Steve? What number?
Well, it depends on. It depends if you watch WWE backstage.
Okay. Yeah.
Because if you watch WWE backstage, then he entered at number two. But if you watch the pay-per-view itself, then he entered at number one.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you. I just want to confirm. So entered at number one, did the fucking work. All right. Didn't just disappear and then pop back in. Literally was in there. Did good work. And I'm going to agree with Sin City Steve. I like how they're utilizing him. And he even said in this article, too, I think they paraphrased him, Ed was talking about, man, he once takes the opportunity to work with other guys he hadn't worked with before. I think that's an honest answer, really honest answer, because if you think about it, even him showing up on NXT was exciting. Yes, most of the time I'm kind of like this when, you know, WWE is talking about first time ever. Somebody went into the men's restroom during a segment break. You know, WWE drums it up. But this time, it did mean something. Because, you know, Edge never went to NXT as far as officially on TV. Do you see what I'm saying? So it was special. I like the commentary that he had between with Finn Balor and Pete Dunne. I like that. I like how he's toying around with everybody to make you wait. I like that. That's good utilization. I also think he said in this article as well, because I did read it, that he's going to show up every day at work. He's going to show up. He wants to get in matches. If he's going to do it, he's going to do it. For me, this is how I would prefer to actually see a utilization of a person that is in the Royal Rumble. Because when you win the Royal Rumble, I got to believe based on the stats, and I'm sure, Cynthia, Steve, this is where you could tell me the stats probably, but your percentage is pretty damn high of winning at WrestleMania. So if you're going to put in the work and you're enjoyable, hell yeah.
Well, I mean, typically you'll have the same winning percentage as anybody else of a match.
Yeah. Don't they give like stats? Thank you for correcting. But don't they give like stats to WWE based on like
these
people who won the Royal Rumble went on to win the actual title match? You know, that's why I was hoping. By the numbers. Thank you. By the numbers. So I'm actually excited for it. I'm glad to see Edge back in the fray full time. Whatever the hell happens.
Let me jump over to Matt Michaels. Now, let's be real. You know, I even in yesterday's wrestling talk, you never fail that when we mention wrestlers, like I think I mentioned Cesaro, you mention age. It doesn't matter who we throw out there. If they've been there for a while, you always go, yes, but what is his fucking age? You always throw that out there. So the question I'm going to ask you, we know Edge is 47. Do you think that he was the right person to win this Royal Rumble? And I would just say based on age, and I say that just because you always throw age out there. Let's go.
Well, let's put it this way. In this case, no, because we're all getting closer to his age. So let's not consider that old.
I'm not in my shit.
So what I find fascinating about this in terms of age, age in itself, I don't think the fans have a problem with. All right. I think they have the problem in terms of relativity to pushing younger talent, you know.
Absolutely. Yes.
Not established talent the same way.
Sure.
Now, I feel that the same people who probably went apeshit about him winning are the same ones who watch AEW and had no problem with Chris Jericho winning the championship there.
Mm. Okay.
And Chris is a number of years older than Edge. So I think that in those regards, it's a lot of noise from people who would have shit if, anyone else won the Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other thing too is that, remember, going into this Rumble, the darling was Daniel Bryan.
Right.
And so fans will also be pissed off because the person they thought should win didn't win. Now, the next portion you got is business. And the fact of the matter is that if you're going to headline WrestleMania with your guys this year, Edge versus Reigns would be probably your best way to go. However, I think that a lot of fans are going to be pissed if they go that way and they don't see Edge versus Finn Balor. I think a lot of those people who, you know, get this Smarty Mark thing and want to see, you know, him put over younger guys, you know, don't want to see him wrestle Reigns. They want to see him wrestle Finn, or probably a small percentage want to see him wrestle McIntyre.
Well, let me just quickly, if you could hold that thought, let me ask you guys who, just quickly, who would you guys want to see him fight out of the three?
I'm going to regretfully say Reigns.
You said Reigns. What did you say, Sin City?
Reigns.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. All right, go ahead back. I'm sorry, man.
So then, you know, if you think about it, that's your ratings right there. That's the reason that that makes sense. Now, something we just talked about, and this is where if you go, hey, Uncle Bruce, looking for a little idea. Here we go.
All right.
You have never seen Edge and the Fiend, right? Edge was wrestling against Orton. So you have WrestleMania happen where, you know, he loses to Reigns. You don't put the belt on him. Or if you go ahead and put the belt on Edge, that's when Miz cashes in on Edge. Okay? You work Edge back to Raw. And you have Edge, through his confrontations with Orton, guess who comes to Orton's aid? The Fiend. And now you transition from Edge and Orton into Edge and the Fiend. That's how you bring it back around. You have now a post WrestleMania into SummerSlam, and there's your main event for SummerSlam.
I like what you're selling, because one thing I've noticed too with Edge's tendencies in every one of his world tour of the different brands, he gives off this impression like, you know, I'm still the ever opportunist. You know, he's been saying that quite a few often. So it leads me to believe that there's still, you know, at some point that's still in him. So when you say the Fiend, right, I'm wondering if you got in a competition with the Fiend, you know, what we talked about last time was people are affected. Would you go back to being the opportunist, old school Edge per se, for people who remember heel Edge, which is exciting. You know,
well, and again, we don't know how the Fiend's coming back. So if that's a possibility, then that's the great way to bring the evil into Edge. The other thing, truly, after you use him for WrestleMania and you have him going through the steps, if Christian is cleared, as it's reported that he is, I wouldn't be surprised if we see them together just one more time in a quick, you know, tag team program to have the belts and then put over some of the younger guys on, you know, as a tag team. I also could see Edge turning on Christian too.
What about if we saw Edge and Christian versus Randy Orton and Karrion Kross? Thus, Kross and Orton, dissension happens there, and then you get that feud, which they hinted at via Twitter.
Yeah.
I think that it's interesting, just in theory, between just Kross and Orton in general, because what you see there really is, you just see Vince getting the videotape and going, when did Randy wrestle in Impact? No, Vince, that's a totally different guy. Well, sign him up, pal. We got another Randy Orton for 20 years.
I can imagine it actually sounding like that, actually, for real. And everybody just looking at him like, all right, let's just roll with it, because if you try to challenge the boss, you're gonna be fired.
Yeah, Randy Orton and Sable. I like those two together.
Or do you want us to get the hands to put on her breast again? Do we want us? Do we want to go that direction?
Oh man!
Hey, Cross, he said it, not us.
Right?
No shit.
Man would say some shit like that. Like, do you think Scarlett would want to wear what Sable wore with the hands? I'm man, you never know what he's gonna say.
All right. Well, we'll jump over into our third. Really
quick. Did you just say Vince would say we're gonna have him? We're gonna have him wear what Sable wore with the hands, the chest.
I'm saying Scarlett. Can Scarlett wear what Sable wore with the hands? I'm saying that sounds like something that Vince McMahon would probably say.
All right.
Disagree with me. I'll wait.
Okay. There we go. All right. We're going to move now over to our third count, which comes from Figure Four on Four Online. And this one is titled AEW New Japan Pro Wrestling Established Working Relationship. And it just starts off saying that on Wednesday edition of the Wrestling Observer, Dave Meltzer said that the quote, the deal is done, end quote, on a working relationship with AEW and New Japan Pro Wrestling. Of course, we saw Kenta's appearance at Wednesday's Beach Break and then next week's Lights Out match with him, AEW World Champion Kenny Omega, Jon Moxley, and Lance Archer are kicking things off. But Meltzer says he's unaware of anything else that is planned after that. He also says, I know people that can't wait to go back to Japan, put it that way. He also talks about that, I guess this was something that was supposed to maybe happen earlier, but I guess at the time, New Japan had a different president at the time, and I guess something didn't work out well with him, and so now with the new leadership in there, they was able to come together and finally put something together.
Yeah.
So, I guess this is, we had discussions on, we don't know, you know, who's working with who, what, but how good, how great is this team pairing? I guess I'm supposed to start with Matt Michaels. Tell us, what's your thoughts on this, man? How excited or not excited or how good you think this is now with this new relationship with AEW and New Japan, finally got this working relationship going?
So I think that what I love about Dave is that Dave is the king of making a statement like the deal is done. Then going outside of this one shot, I don't know any plans for the future, but the deal is in place. So I take it for what it is. I think that, you know, if they can work together, great. I love his blanket statement of there's a lot of guys who would like to go back to Japan. Yeah, there's a whole country that would like to be able to go back to Japan, Dave, right about now. So very, very obvious statements from Captain Obvious Meltzer. Listen, it won't hurt him by any means. And if you look at the blurred lines between what they're doing with Impact and what they're doing with this, and it's possibly a great thing. Right? Maybe getting some exposure for other guys, but you're also giving exposure to other guys on other brands. Hopefully it boosts the other shows. The weird thing about it is simply this. AEW has only been around for just over a year, and they need to reach out to other federations to bump up their talent? That's strange, man.
Wow.
That's strange. It's really not worrisome in the fact that obviously the ratings aren't hurting by any means to where TNT needs to get involved and tell them you can't do this and you can only do this, blah, blah, blah. But what's alarming about that is I think that if you were to look 3 years in, right, and had these guys, your guys established,
mm-hmm,
to where it wasn't a wrestling fan of, you know, guys who watch all the different products, right? Because for them, it's a fantasy matchup, all right? But for an audience that you're trying to build and get hooked on your guys to make these guys seem so important, and then you have them interact with these other companies, that would probably make a little more impact on the actual fans who don't follow. Listen, honestly, who the fuck is Kenta in the eyes of people who only watch AEW? Right? I mean, that's honest. And if you're talking about, you know, let's say a 10-year-old kid's watching with his dad or his mom, and they don't follow anything other than, you know, the TV's on, I'm kind of interested because my kid likes this. Who's that? I don't know who that is, son. And now you have to entrust that they're going to be able to give that viewer a thorough history or something that makes them invested in that guy who's not even part of their company. So I'm taking it from the tough angle. It becomes a tough angle. Hopefully there's a working relationship, but hopefully it doesn't overshine the actual talent that AEW has, to the point when the Good Brothers stop showing up and you became a fan of the Good Brothers and you can't get, you know, Axios TV. I mean, who won? At that point. So
let me jump over to you, Simon Street. When you heard about this, you know, deal is done. what was your thoughts on that? And I mean, I guess ultimately, if there is this working relationship with Impact Wrestling, I don't know what that means. I mean, could one assume that means that there could be some movement between New Japan working with Impact, with AEW? I mean, you know, it's, you know, I mean, Matt Michael says that blurred line, but I don't know. What's your thoughts when you heard about this? What do you see?
Well, for me personally, I've talked about this for a long time, wanting to see them make good, I guess. I don't want to say promise, because I don't think they ever promised it, but they definitely talked about moving forward to what AEW was kind of going to kind of be, and having open relationships with other promotions. And, you know, and again, that's uncharted territory. And that might be some of those blurred lines that Michael talks about, because it you got to figure out what's the structure with that, to where we know the reality, not everybody's going to win equally, but if it's going to provide exposure for other talent, whether they be on the AEW roster who aren't, you know, from, you know, WWE yesterday, let's put it that way. Okay. It also brings exposure to people who probably only watch AEW or wrestling promotions as it is in on American television, who might actually be excited to see someone from New Japan that they would never thought. And then before you know it, they're like, wow, I actually probably check this out. Mm-hmm. I agree with what Matt Michaels is saying with regards to that scenario where you said with Access TV. Now, even though I joke around, it's kind of a really serious thing, because I could see somebody watch AEW, really love the Good Brothers, and then when they finally are on AEW no more, they go to Access TV, and then someone's like, well, why can't I immediately quickly find it? And again, I'm not going to go deeply into that, because I've been the worst critic of Access TV from the get-go. But what I will say is that when I first heard about AEW, this is immediately what came to mind. Now, whether I just thought about it just out of thin air, but I see the potential, because I know WWE will never do it. And I hope that they can come up with a good structure plan, some kind of way to where it can work. And I would like to see, like I said before on the past on the show, I'd like to see a big event that's once a year. Doesn't necessarily have to be titles on the line per se, but to where you see a mashup with all the different promotions. I think that would be something to see. I would actually be excited to watch something like that. And I do think it may provide an opportunity for some of those AEW stars that people say, like, they're not doing a good job of showcasing those AEW originals. Let's put it that way, right? I think this is a good opportunity to kind of see what they can do, you know, extend a platform. You know, yes, COVID is limiting some things, but wouldn't it be cool to see someone from AEW that normally isn't on the show all the time show up in New Japan? You see what I'm saying? That could possibly help him, because there's been people in WWE that left WWE, went to New Japan, and then got made. And then when they came back stateside, it was like, wow. So, I mean, there's something to that is what I'll say. So yeah. I'm excited.
Awesome. So, Sin City Steve, I know I was watching AEW this past week, and they had mentioned they're going to start this Women's World Championship Eliminator Tournament of some sort. But I noticed they had women that they're going to have from the States, and also they're going to have the competition for women that are from Japan. I'm just assuming, that could be wrong. I'm thinking maybe these women are coming from New Japan, or maybe not. Okay. So maybe that's
So here's the thing is, sure, New Japan, they don't really, they don't have women's matches on the show.
Gotcha. Okay.
So
I didn't think I saw any, but I was trying to connect.
Yeah. New Japan is owned by Bushiroad, and they quite literally own another all women's promotion, called Stardom. So they are owned by the same company, but they are completely separate.
Okay.
And they do not market together.
Okay. So is this then, I must assume you got to be pretty hyped then to hear about this partnership that they have. And, you know, what do you think can they come out of this? And how about addressing some of the concerns that Matt Michaels have brought up as well? You know, maybe overshadowing some of the AEW wrestlers or even fans not even recognizing who certain people are, like Kenta. That kind of, I mean, for people that didn't know Kenta, that was a big thing that happened this past week. And some people probably looked and go, oh, okay, who's that? You know, now if you're a big fan, of course you know. But yeah, some 10-year-old probably. But anyway, just address that. And overall, what's your, how ecstatic are you about this relationship?
Sure. So I think that what really was kind of holding this from taking place since day one was Harold May, who was the former president for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Mm-hmm. He and Kenny Omega had quite a falling out, to say the very least.
Okay.
And that is, Harold May is the reason why Kenny Omega left New Japan completely.
Okay.
So, and this was at a time when Omega had the IWGP Heavyweight Championship.
Okay.
So he was at the top of the show. He was, you know, he had earned the nickname, you know, the best bout machine, because he would go, you know, almost no matter who he faced, he would be able to, you know, get an amazing match out of that individual. And when he was across the ring from someone like Okada, you have instant classics. So I think that with Harold May gone, that really kind of opened the door to the working relationship. So much so that you have people like Kenta that, you know, have come over. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, Excalibur, I believe it was, at the very end, they were just attempting to, you know, they were just attempting to, at a breakneck pace, put over Kenta and who he was and all that kind of stuff. To be honest, I would have been just as okay with, you know, Excalibur saying, "Oh my God, it's Kenta. What's he doing here?" And then you cut. You don't divulge any info about Kenta. And
you honestly think that Excalibur knows who Kenta is?
Yes,
I would hope he knows.
Just because, yeah. No, I think it's one of those things that, you know, we're going to see them start to put out the vignettes with, you know, Moxley involved and why Kenta is chasing him and, you know, why he followed him to AEW and all this kind of stuff. I really think that we're going to get the backstory on that, as far as, you know, whatever kind of a kayfabe backstory that they're going to build. But I think that, you know, we really don't have a whole lot to worry about in that instance. I have more faith in AEW and New Japan kind of retconning things as need be, if they have to make everything kind of mesh and to make sense. At the end of the day, though, I think that this partnership is huge for everyone involved. I think that it's kind of funny. You know, you see AEW working with Impact, you see them working with New Japan, mm-hmm. and then you just got to figure ROH is, you know, that that jilted lover that that they won't call back. So I mean, they're not gonna work with ROH, but they're gonna work with seemingly every other promotion. Oh yeah, NWA too. So to answer Matt Michaels's point, I think that, you know, this is something that I've talked about on the show, and I'm pretty sure that we've all talked about on the show, is that it is important for, you know, the second tier feds to kind of work together. And I think that that's going to better everybody in the long haul. I think that I don't see any negativity. Let's put it this way. As far as this working relationship, would I love to possibly see Kenny Omega versus Kota Ibushi? You know, the one time that the Golden Lovers are actually going to get in there and wrestle each other. Hell yeah, I'd love to see that. That would be awesome. Do it at the Tokyo Dome, or if it wants to be done stateside, then do it at Madison Square Garden, whatever. And I think that any way that happens, it's going to be a very good thing. Mm-hmm. As far as furthering AEW's women's division, I think that it's abundantly clear that at this point they have to outsource their women's division in order for there to be any sort of relevancy, which is something that we talk about every single week on the show, but it bears repeating every single week. And it sucks that they have to outsource, you know, their women's division, in order to get relevancy, but that's where they are at this point. And I think that this is a smart way of doing this by having a US and Japan, tournament. And essentially the way that it's all going to work is the Japanese women are going to compete in their own little tournament. And then the US women are going to compete in their own little tournament. And then the winner of the Japanese tournament is going to come over here stateside. I don't know if they're going to record the matches at Stardom and then, you know, use those to fill up time slots during AEW Dynamite. I hope not, genuinely, but we'll see how that goes. I think that they're grasping for straws at this point. They're trying to do anything that they can to further their women's division.
Yeah.
And let's be real, they're throwing anything on the wall that they can and just seeing what sticks, praying that something does stick at this point.
Sure. Awesome stuff, guys. That is our three count for this show. We're going to give some final thoughts here and then a few reminders as we come to the conclusion of our show. Let me start over with you, Simon Street. What would you like the people out there to know for the week?
Just pretty much, you know, stay, you know, stay safe out there, obviously. Thank you so much for supporting the show. It really does mean a lot to us. We enjoy doing this for y'all, truth be told. And the more feedback y'all give, the more insight it gives us. We are definitely a pro evolution type of brand. And so we're always looking for opportunities to entertain you. So if you have any comments, suggestions, please don't be afraid. We never going to, you know, push you away or ignore you. So with that, have a good evening and talk to y'all soon.
Yeah. And definitely when he talks about, you know, reaching out, you can always email us. It's a very long title, but it is Vegas Bad Boys with a Z of podcasting at gmail.com. But you can always just hit us up on our social media. If you follow us, just DM us, you know, Twitter, IG, whatever. And we usually respond if, you know, when we see fit. So, yes, definitely. Sin City, what you want to tell the people?
Thank you guys for hanging out with us tonight. Thank you for liking, sharing, subscribing, and sharing our podcast and our brand with your friends and with everybody that matters to you. We truly appreciate you. And as Simon Street said, we do this for you. So thank you. Special shout out and special thank you to all of the brave men and women serving this country, on lands, both foreign and domestic. You enable us to be able to do what we're doing right now. So thank you very much. And also repsports.com, REPPsports.com. Go there, get all of your, you know, get all of your pre-workout, your weight loss, your energy drink needs, REPPsports.com, promo code Vegas at checkout. Be like Carlito and save 15%.
Absolutely. Matt Michaels, man, what do you want to tell the folks?
I really don't want to tell them anything as much as I'd like to clue them in on something they might have missed. So if you listen closely, when the mask came off of Kenta, you could hear Jim Ross go, "Oh my God, it's Funaki! Funaki! Slobberknocker! Barbecue sauce!"
Thank you, Matt Michaels. We definitely appreciate that. You know, if he's got the ear, guys. He do, because I didn't hear it. So, but I trust his ear. We want to remind everyone to, if you don't have our app, to download it. It's free, iOS or Android. Just type Vegas Bad Boys, again with the Z, it'll pop up. Download it. We like to communicate through everyone on there, especially when the shows are on and pay-per-view, so do that. Hey, if you got the Cash App, send us a buck or two. Send us 100 if you like. Our tagline is Vegas Bad Boys. Again, all we have to say with the Z, because someone might put the S, and we don't want it to go to whoever that is. And so, and of course, that funds you send, we will help build our platform by letting other people know that we exist, so they can enjoy the show just as much as you do. All right, so with that, we thank everybody for listening to us, and until then, we'll see you next time. Peace out.
Barbecue sauce.
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.